Okay, thank you. First, I'd like to thank the nice introduction, and also I'd like to thank Vincent for inviting me here. Okay, so today I'm going to, maybe I want to say a few words about this center. This center was established at the beginning of this year. Okay, actually, because the renovation problem, it become fully functional only in August. So it's a brand new center. And you notice there's a title, an international center, which means we hire not only Chinese, we hire also non-Chinese. Okay, so basically we have ads on Physics Today, so you can look it up. So the full capacity, planned full capacity for this center is 35 permanent members. Now we have like about 15, so we still have 20 more to go. Okay.
The official name is Peking University or Beijing University?
Is historically Peking University, but you know the name of the city changed from Peking to Beijing. But it's still the name of the university, the ancient name of the university is still the same. It remains the old one. Okay.
So the historical is from Beijing to Peking.
Yeah.
And then back to Beijing.
So basically, I'm going to talk about universal behavior in quantum chaotic systems. Okay, so this is a one particle physics. Okay, so I know this audience is a many body physics audience. Okay, so hopefully I'll get you interested. Okay, but near the end of the talk, I'll talk about how this universal behavior can be related to many particle physics. Okay, and actually I'll show you an example. This universal behavior can be used to detect PKT transitions. Okay. So first, this work is done with Xiong Hongwei, professor at the Wuhan Institute of Physics and Mathematics. And if you are interested, the details of our work can be found here in this archive. Okay, so first I'd like to briefly talk about what is quantum chaos, okay? For people who do not study quantum chaos, actually this term quantum chaos is very confusing because, quantum is inherently linear, right? But as we all know, chaos is a nonlinear phenomenon. So when you put them together, it's confusing to many people. So actually the definition of the quantum chaos is kind of strange because it defines it this way. So this is a well-accepted definition for quantum chaos. Okay, quantum chaotic system, a quantum system whose corresponding classical system are chaotic. So there have been efforts, try to define quantum chaos within the framework of quantum mechanics. But so far, there's no well-accepted definition yet. But this is a well-accepted definition. Because almost all classical systems are chaotic, so almost all quantum systems are quantum chaotic systems. Okay, I'm pretty sure Hubble model is a quantum chaotic system. People do not notice it because you are only interested in the ground state. Okay, if you want to look at chaos, you have to go to high energy levels. Okay, so. But the people who study chaos, okay, quantum chaos, they do not study Hubble models, this kind of very complicated system. Actually, they try to get this system as simple as possible. So billions are one of the, the favorite systems in the field of quantum chaos. Here, just to show you two examples. So this is the most popular billions, okay, the stadium billions. Basically, it consists of two semicircles, okay, connected by a straight lines, okay. And this is called the Lehmann billiards, okay. So actually what I show here is called the scar states. So this is two eigenstates, okay, are at a very high energy level. So basically what they show is some fingerprints of this classical periodic motion. Okay, actually the probably most famous results in the field of quantum chaos is this result on eigenenergy level spacing. Okay, for integrable system, for example, in this rectangular billiards, okay, the energy level spacing is Poisson distribution. But for this chaotic system, chaotic billions, okay, this boundary is curved, okay. The energy level spacing is a Wigner distribution. So the essential difference is here, you know. For the Poisson distribution, the energy level spacing zero has the largest probability, which means in this system, the energy wants to be degenerated, okay. The energy levels tend to cluster together. But for the chaotic system, okay, the probability at an energy level spacing is zero. So basically, this energy levels try to avoid each other. Okay, actually, you know, this billion system, you know, more than the one when people were studying them, okay, it looks like a toy model, which only theorists are interested in, okay. But with advanced, you know, this technology, actually this system can become experimental systems. Okay, so basically there are two groups. One is Davidson's group, the other is Reason's group. In 2001, basically they used this optical setup to create this optical BDS. Okay, so basically these are two diffractors. So this controls the y direction, this controls the x direction. So basically they can control how much get diffracted in the y direction, how much get diffracted at the y direction. So in this way, if you change this with time, basically they can write an optical period here. If it moves fast enough, it will be just like a period. Okay. So actually, they used this optical period to study the chaos. But the problem in their paper is, you know, these code atoms are not condensed. Okay. So actually, what they study is classical chaos, not quantum chaos. Okay, actually, from here, if you replace these code atoms with BEC, then you can study really quantum chaos. So actually, you know, these BDS systems are no longer toy models; they can become really experimental systems. So actually, partly inspired by this fact, you know, these BDS can now become experimental systems. So we decided to do some theoretical study, okay. So, but we follow a different line of research. Before, if you go to the field of quantum chaos, you will see majority works are studying the properties of eigenfunctions and eigenstates, eigenenergies, okay. So, there are only a few papers on this wave dynamics in this period, okay. So, this is one of the, I think this is the most famous one. This is the wave dynamics by Tom Sawicz and Heller, okay. So, basically, you have this stadium period, okay? So then this is a wave packet. Basically, you can consider this as a BEC. And this wave packet has an initial velocity to the right. So it will move to the right, at the same it will expand, okay? Then get reflected by the boundary. And after a few bouncings, okay, immediately this wave packet will smear out throughout the whole period, okay? So we basically follow this research. Okay, but we choose a different billet. So we choose a so-called a ripple billet. Okay, basically these two curved boundaries is described by this cosine wave function. Okay, and the reason we choose this one because I studied this billet as a PhD student, so I know all the details about this billet. Okay. So then we prepare a wave packet at the center of this period, okay, give it the initial velocity to the right, then evolve it according to the Schrodinger equation, okay. So because, of course, you can put a nonlinear term here to study a real BEC, how it moves, but this is not essential. So we're just to be simple, to choose Schrodinger equations. Then this is what we have, okay, very similar to what Tom Sawicz and Heller obtained, okay. Basically, this is the wave packet will move to the right, get refracted. Then after a few bounces, okay, eventually it becomes like a very homogeneous, but very like a random looking, okay. So, and we compared this wave dynamics in ripple period to the wave dynamics in square period, okay. So this is a wave dynamic in the square period, okay. So this is a integrable system. Okay, so what you see is, you know, they always form some regular patterns. The wave will never get a random or something like that. So.
So what are the four panels that
figure
show? Are those four different times of the
set? Yeah, this is sequential like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, okay. So it's the same time, actually. It's the same time sequence.
Right.
It's like here, but I did not label it here, okay. And I want to say it's a time unit, it's TS. TS basically is, you know, this wave packet has initial velocity. So basically, for a classical particle with that velocity, travels a long trip along this direction, okay. So basically, this is 6 TS, basically it's the wave has to get reflected like 6 times, something like that. So basically, you can see the wave dynamics in a chaotic system and in an integral system are very, very different, okay, just by looking at it, okay. But the point is, you know, whether we can quantify it or not, okay, quantify this difference. Okay, so this is what we do, okay. Whenever we find something random, okay, so the first thing we think about is to do some statistics, okay. So we define a quantity. This S is defined as the area of the region, okay, because in here it looks rather uniform, but it's still, at some positions the density is higher, at some positions the density is lower, right? So we can define quantities as the area of the region where the density is larger than N, okay. When we compute something here, then it becomes very interesting, okay. So basically, this is a probability above the average density, okay. So what we see here is for the ripple period, okay. Initially, the probability above average density is almost zero. So it
what's ripple Biller problem is the point? Ripple Biller.
So for the ripple period, okay. So basically, the probability it increases very sharply with time, okay. Then it settles to a fixed point, fixed value.
NS is?
This one?
Yeah, is the average density.
Yeah, so basically, if you choose this as the average density, then this is basically, you know, some point is the density higher, some point is the density lower. So we can ask the area of this density. The density is larger than the average one, then divided by the total area. So then that's the probability. Okay. So then what we get is actually, you know, quite interesting, you know, for the ripple period, okay. So basically this one increases very fastly to a fixed point, then fluctuates slightly along these values, okay. But for the square period, which is integrable, okay, the initially it's the same, you know, basically increases from almost zero to a finite value, then, but it oscillates very strongly, okay, with a large amplitude. Along this, actually the average is not this value. Eventually we found out what this value is exactly 1 over E. E is Euler number. Okay. Yeah.
A kind of experimental discovery, you have a theory for that? Do you have any theory why it's 1 over
E? Yes, I'm going to explain it why this is so. Okay. So it's a.
But did you find it analytically first or numerically first?
Numerically first. Ah. Then we eventually are able to understand it completely. Okay. So basically, this is what I'm going to show you. So we did this first. Then we get encouraged, you know. So we just do more statistics. Okay. So basically, we just try to compute the probability at a given density, right? Because you know some probabilities. At some position, probability is higher, some probability is lower, so we can compute the probability at a given density. Okay. Then this becomes more striking. Okay. Then we find for the ripple period, okay, eventually, you know, for the last figure, you know, when the wave packet smears out in the period, okay, then the density distribution is exponential. Okay, but for the square period, it's not. You know, this red line is this function, and this blue one is the numerical result, so they don't fit for square period. But for the ripple period, they just fit on each other very well, okay. So this explains why it's 1 over E, because this N naught actually is the density in the unit of the average density. So for average density, N naught is 1, so that's 1 over E.
Is it a property of this particular Billard, or it's a kind of general property of random.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to explain. Okay, basically, though, you know, as we found out this one for the Ripple period, then we checked the stadium period and the other period, then we found it's the same. Actually, we can also put on the nonlinear term. Nonlinear term in the Schrodinger equation get together the gross periodic equation. Okay, so it is also we are reaching this state. Okay, no matter what. But a numerical, you know, but a numerical calculation is always not complete. You will not always be 100% sure, right? So basically, then we do some analysis, okay? So we think, okay, this wave get bounced around by these boundaries. So it become quite random. So, okay, so we can think about this, the final wave function would be something like a random superposition of plane waves, okay? So we just computed this one with like a 1 million like plane waves, something like that. Okay, but what I want to mention is this value is a complex value, okay? It must be a complex value. Then this is what we get from this random superposition of plane wave, this density, looks like this. Then we can also do this statistics, okay? Then we again find this exponential distribution. And this one, actually, it fits on each other almost perfectly, okay? Because actually, to show how perfect it is, we choose to use this dot. This function and this line for the numerical results. Okay, so it's almost perfect.
And random means what? So the CKs are distributed?
Yes, CK is artificially distributed. We gave it a range. Actually, we
uniformly or?
Actually, we use the very different schemes. Okay, so it can be uniform between some values. We can also use some Gaussian distribution. We tried all kinds of.
I mean, I can look at it in a different way, right? Even I can say the real part and the imaginary part as each distribution. Or you can take the radial part, the amplitude, and the phase is.
Yeah.
So there's a metric.
See, you can put this as a real one, then plus some phase here.
Yeah.
So it will be the same. But I will just convince you, you know. But this, no matter what, this has to be complex.
Sure.
If this is real, then you have to put some phase here.
Yes, I know.
Otherwise, you will not get this exponential distribution.
Yeah, my point is just then because of the metric is different. And so you are saying that you would get the same result anyway.
You know, if this CK is real, okay, then you have to put some random phase here. But you have to have two random variables,
sure.
for each plane wave.
Yeah, but
without that, then you will not.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, actually, the next slide will explain to you why this is okay. So basically, then eventually, okay, after that random superposition of plane wave analysis, okay. So basically, actually, we found a rigorous proof, okay. So basically, this is the proof we borrowed from the theories of random matrix. Okay. So basically, you can write on this wave function. You can cut this space into small pieces, right? Then you can just write the wave function approximate as this. Okay. So basically, this is the wave vector at this position, xj and yj. Okay. Then aj is just alpha j is just the amplitude at that position. So, and of course then as because this is Schrodinger equation, so the norm is conserved. Okay. So basically, what this does is you have an n-dimensional Hilbert space, and this normalization condition will give a hypersphere in the high-dimensional Hilbert space, okay? So if you start with some quantum states, okay, then it evolves inside of this period. Basically, it will randomly evolves on this hypersphere, okay? Eventually, basically, fill out of this hypersphere. Okay, then you can ask a question. Then you can let all these quantum states project to one given component, okay? Then you ask the value of the probability of this component between certain values. Then this is a simple mathematics. Okay. Then you do the computation. when you let n goes to infinity, then what you get is just this exponential distribution. Okay, so basically from here, actually we can just prove rigorously, you know, so this is a...
So it's a kind of a rigorous proof based on some assumption still, because you assume ergodicity, right?
Yes, exactly.
Under the assumption of ergodicity.
Exactly, exactly. So basically, I don't think that anybody has proved this kind of ergodicity yet, but somehow our numerical result shows, you know, there are this kind of ergodicity even in the Hilbert space. You know, people usually talk about a classical chaos in the terms of a phase space, right?
So basically, we can put it this way. So basically, your result is a sort of implicit proof of ergodicity, because once you assume ergodicity, you...
Exactly. So actually, I'm going to talk about this one, actually, in later, actually. Okay, okay.
Did you prove it for any distribution of the alpha j, or did you take it
I suppose alpha, you know, is randomly scattered on this hemisphere. So randomly, as random as you want. Okay. So basically, it's what Boris said. It's just the ergodicity. Okay. So basically, if you start with some given quantum states, okay, as the time evolves, okay. So basically, this. This trajectory will cover the whole hemisphere uniformly. Okay, so we have this assumption, okay, just like actually what Boris said. Okay. Okay, so basically then after we get this, you know, pretty much convinced ourselves, you know, this exponential is really a universal behavior. Actually, then we began to think about, okay, this is not easy to understand classically. Because if you think about it, we have a period here. You slow classical particles randomly into this period, okay? Then you cut this period into small pieces, and then you count how many numbers in each pieces, okay? So what do you think about it, eventually you will convince yourself this distribution should be a Gaussian distribution. Because if you cut these pieces, you know, if you cut this period into small pieces, then you count the number, the number should be fluctuating along the average number in this area, right? So for classical or some gas, you know, this should be a Gaussian, not exponential distribution. So what this says is, you know, this exponential is a quantum phenomenon, okay? So basically to confirm this one, okay, so we did some simulation with classical particles. Okay, so basically we started with the same a cloud of classical particles with the same spatial distribution and the same momentum distribution as the wave packet I just showed you. Okay, so basically initially it just moves to the right and then get reflected. Eventually it becomes very uniform in the period. Okay, then we can also do the statistics. Okay, so what we get is a Gaussian distribution. So just confirms our, you know, expectation. So this just shows you this exponential distribution is a quantum phenomenon. It only applies to quantum gas, not classical gas.
Well, it's better to say classical field because it's a single particle problem.
Yeah. Okay. But this is single particle. But even you have inaction as long as, even you have inaction, as long as it's random, you know, if you put some particles, which they are classical particle interacting with each other, then let it move inside this ripple period, okay? Eventually, I think the probability distribution is still be Gaussian. It should be independent of inaction.
What happens if you have
many quantum particles? Many quantum particles? From our derivation, okay, it should be the same.
You mean it's still a exponent, not Gaussian?
It should be exponential.
So how do you have a crossover from quantum mechanics to classical mechanics then?
Yeah, this is what I'm going to talk about, you know.
Okay. Can I ask here's another question. When you say many particles, do you assume that they are bosons? Or can they be distinguishable? Because if they are distinguishable, it's like one particle.
In here, it's indistinguishable, just one particle. So and I study only BEC here. Okay, so actually, how to say? actually the to my understanding.
It's not quite busy because you don't have long range order. It's basically classical field, right?
You mean for this one?
Yeah, because by BEC, we normally, it's a matter of definition, of course, what do you mean by BEC? But normally by BEC, we mean a state which has long range order.
Yeah.
Because if you.
It has no long range order, but it has long range coherence.
Oh, yeah. But coherence is a property of the classical field. Whenever you have a field that's somehow coherent.
For this case, it can be regarded as a classical field. Right. As I show you later, actually, the light, classical light has this property.
Right, because it's a classical field.
Exactly. So basically, essential question in the field of quantum chaos is how classical mechanics corresponds, how quantum mechanics changes to classical mechanics. Okay, so what we try to do here is also how this quantum exponential distribution changes to classical Gaussian distributions. Okay, so what we did here is when we do the sampling. Okay, so we cut this area into small pieces. Okay, and usually each small piece is then the sampling cell, the size of sampling cell, then we change the size of sampling cell. Okay. From very small to large one, okay. Then this distribution will change from this exponential distribution to this Gaussian distribution, okay. So from cost greening, this exponential distribution will change to this classical Gaussian distribution. Actually, this cost greening is equivalent to that h bar goes to zero, because if you let h bar goes to zero, then the wave number becomes smaller. So basically, then in a given size, you need to something more small size too.
Can I then ask you a question? The dense should be a sort of bimodality, I believe, because you see, if you approach classical limit by switching off H bar,
yeah.
I believe your curve is supposed to have two distinct pieces. One mimicking this Gaussian distribution, and
yeah.
Some tail, presumably tail, mimicking exponential overlays, presumably it will be the tail. So do you see this bimodality? Because somehow if H bar is very small.
Yeah. You mean the tail has a exponential distribution?
Or other way around, but I understand.
No, we haven't analyzed very carefully the tails, but what we will see is just this one gets from exponential becomes Gaussian. We did not analyze very detail of this tail, okay. But maybe,
it's a common sense. There should be a kind of continuous crossover from one to another, right? Because you can always, think.
Yeah, in the middle for this one, for the green one, okay. So it's kind of between Gaussian and the exponential.
And the tail is exponential, right?
Yeah, this tail is exponential. Yeah, it fits, But if you increase the sampling size further, okay, then it becomes Gaussian.
Oh, but probably the tail will be exponential.
But if you go to this part, okay, maybe it's still
should
exponential.
Be because
yeah.
By continuity.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so I just show you another property of this exponential distribution. Okay, for this exponential distribution, the number fluctuation actually is n squared. Okay, so for Gaussian, this is n. So basically, the number fluctuation is huge. Okay, the relative fluctuation will never decrease if you increase the number of particles. Okay, actually, just another interesting property for the exponential distribution. Actually, basically for this distribution, okay, basically you can define an entropy. Okay, then you can prove this entropy is the largest one. This is the largest for this exponential distribution. All other distributions have smaller entropy. Okay, so basically it's understandable from the rigorous proof. Okay, basically you are assuming this. This quantum state is distributing uniformly on this hypersphere in the Hilbert space.
Okay.
Okay. Now I want to talk about, you know, I didn't mention any previous works, okay, on in these directions. Basically, so, after we get this result, basically we just dig into the literature because we just don't believe, you know, this kind of simple physics, nobody has noticed it before, okay. But after some search, we are now pretty sure, actually, in the field of quantum chaos, okay, I think this result is new. And so basically, we found a kind of a mini review paper by Baker in this 2007 European Physics Journal paper, okay. So basically, in this paper, he summarized the study of amplitude distribution of eigenstates, okay. Why is amplitude distribution? Because for all eigenstates, okay, they are real. Okay, so they do not need to study this density distribution. So they studied this amplitude distribution, okay, for eigenstates. And also they studied this random superposition of plane waves, but with real coefficients, okay. So then with real coefficients, okay, so then the amplitude distribution is Gaussian. Okay, then you can prove it actually. So somehow people...
Can I ask you, because I didn't quite understand the statement of the problem. So they take a single eigen.
A single eigenstate.
Is it like checking this ETH eigenstate hypothesis whether a single eigenstate is representative or not?
I'm not sure their motivation, but I'm going to show you this later.
Will you be discussing this?
I will discuss it, but they did not discuss it. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. And then eventually we actually find this exponential distribution has been known in the field of optics for a very long time. Okay, you can basically find this exponential distribution in these two books, one by Goodman, who's a professor at Stanford, and Pinson, who's a professor at Hong Kong University of Science and Technology. Okay, so and actually they call this the light with this intensity distribution, thermal light, okay. What's interesting here is, you know, in this formula, there's no temperature, but they call it thermal light because it's as random as it can guess, right? So it's a thermal light, called a thermal light. So now I want to mention something, okay. You know, people, you know, you guys are, you know, this many body physics people, so you want to know how this simple single particle physics is related to what you are interested in. Okay. So basically we checked, you know, for the eigenstates. So this is the eigenstate we computed, okay. So we also computed this density distribution. Actually, it's not exponential distribution, okay. It does not fit the exponential distribution. Actually, we checked the many, many eigenstates. None of them fit the exponential distribution. Okay, so basically somehow I believe maybe, I'm not sure, I put a question mark here. Maybe this is a counterexample to ETH, you know, this eigenstate thermalization hypothesis.
The reason I was asking this question because it was exactly my counterexample which I brought to Marcus Ringel,
really?
Maxim Alshan. I was a reviewer of their paper, okay. And I just asked them a question, what do they think about the Wiener,
okay.
In terms of ETH, because I was okay. Pretty sure that it's a counterexample.
Okay.
Well, I'm Mark Srednicki, the middle name there. So,
okay. I think,
as you were saying earlier, the eigenstate should look like random superpositions of plane waves with real coefficients.
But actually, even that is not exactly exact. Actually, if you go to read this paper, what we have found out,
this paper very
you know,
well.
Yeah. So basically, for real coefficients, okay, the amplitude distribution is Gaussian. But for many, many eigenstates, the amplitude distribution is not Gaussian.
Well, it's expected to be Gaussian for all, quote, almost all eigenstates in the h bar goes to zero limit.
But the h bar goes to limit, which means higher energy levels.
Right.
So
if you could go back to your picture, so if you assume the amplitude distribution is Gaussian, then the intensity distribution should have what's called a Porter-Thomas distribution, which is e to the minus n over root n.
Okay.
And that just comes from a Gaussian distribution in a real variable, translating Gaussian distribution in a real variable to an intensity distribution.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus translating a Gaussian distribution in a complex variable to
an intensity. Exactly. So,
I will bet you that that thing is pretty well fit by Porter Thomas, which is divided by root M.
There's no uniform. At least we checked like 1,000 eigenstates.
Yeah, but you didn't check them against e to the minus n over root n, which is what you should.
Okay, well, maybe we can go back to it. But the point here, even it fits the part Thomas distribution, but it does not fit the exponential distribution. Because
it shouldn't. That's not the prediction.
Can I ask you to clarify? If we just take a single eigenstate,
single
at random, what do you think, or what do you know, will it just be representative?
Yes.
It will?
Yeah.
Oh.
High enough energy.
But
to my knowledge, okay. So basically, for eigenstates, this distribution seems to me has no general features. It varies from eigenstate to eigenstate.
I'm predicting a distribution that it will fit, which is e to the minus.
Okay. But I don't have the exact results here, because I have compared this one to the exponential distribution for many eigenstates, and my impression is, you know, this distribution has no universal probability. It differs from one eigenstate to another. We checked, many.
Yeah, but how big are the fluctuations?
Yeah, maybe the
fluctuations.
Yeah. So, yeah. But this is what we found. Actually, at least, you know, this eigenstate does not share the general property of the universal property of general, you know, quantum states. You know, for general quantum states, it has this exponential distribution. But for eigenstates, it just does not have.
But can we put it this way? Because my basically objection was much more simpler. I was not discussing I was not discussing statistical properties of a single eigenstate. My point was very basic. If I take a single eigenstate, it features zeros, right? Because it's real and it's highly excited. And if I take a local operator, which just measures density at a given point, it can happen that for a given eigenstate, it's close to zero, much lower than something. So in this sense, I believe that it's beyond any reasonable doubt that ETH is violated in this particular sense.
Well, you have to specify observables that have smooth classical limits. So you're allowed to look at the density averaged over some region.
Yeah.
That has a fixed
small enough region.
All right, so now I want to take the h bar goes to zero limit, which means I'm taking the wavelength smaller and smaller. So you're going to do exactly what Gao did for, he's going to average over bigger and bigger course.
Why should we take h bar somewhere? It's just a fixed number. Why should we take the limit?
Well, all right, so that stands in for a sufficiently high energy limit. So it's just like, you know, a particle in a box, right? That if you look at, you know, as the wavelengths get smaller and smaller, it looks more and more like a uniform.
Then I agree.
Of course, if you look very closely, you see them.
Then we are on the same page. Basically, you're saying ETH works here in the limit of arbitrary high temperature. So
if
it's the size of the box and take the limit of high temperature, then I agree with you.
Yeah.
But if it just fix the temperature,
in that case, then it will become Gaussian.
Yeah, it becomes
Gaussian. I just showed you, it's no longer exponential. So it's still, you know. Then I want to, this is a slide that just, David Hills gave a talk, Blackboard talk like last week, he talked about a dynamical phase transition, right? He studied this spin system, and this is a random field which has a value between minus h to plus h, okay? So I think he put J equals to 1, right? So this is under ferromagnetic action. Then in that paper, they discovered this so-called dynamical phase transition from ergodic states to localized states. Okay, so that's a critical point here. And what I want to draw parallel here is the same thing here, okay? So basically for this square period, okay, it's like A equals 0. When A equals 0, what you get is a square period, okay? When it is not equal to 0, you will get this. And then you can change A continuous from 0 to here. So then basically you see here, is here, this system does not have the ability to drive this system into a chaotic quantum state, okay? But this system has this ability. So I believe maybe this also has some kind of dynamical phase transition here. But what the problem is we don't know this issue before. So when I go back, I will check out this one. So we'll see if it bears any similarity to the dynamical phase transition talked about by David Hume.
Why would it expect it to have chaos for arbitrarily small a?
Actually, I know once A is very small, actually this is not very chaotic. If you draw the phase space diagram, okay, you will see lots of regular islands. Okay. This is I know this very well, okay, because I studied this as a PhD student. Okay, so I know this.
So I maybe go back a minute. You have not been making a distinction between fully chaotic systems, classically fully chaotic, where the entire phase space is chaotic, and mixed systems. So, is Billiard a mixed system?
I think this is a mixed system. Yeah. Yeah. If one A is large, then the phase, you know, if you draw the phase space, it's very random. Okay. So. I don't think this, but this period is not is as fully understood as the stadium period. Okay, so this is still many problems not known, but I'm suspecting, you know, there's a dynamic phase transition here. If you change A continuous from zero to some finite value. Okay. So now, lastly, I just give you an example. So this exponential distribution can be a very useful tool in the cold atom physics, okay? So as we know, you know, CCD imaging is a primary experimental tool in cold atom physics, okay? So if you do time of flight, you will see this condensation, right? Then actually, if you measure the noise correlation, you can derive lots of physics from just the picture, these CCD pictures, okay? And as recently, I think Jason and Zhou Qi has a paper, and then they basically talked about how to get from this chaplet densities, okay, get the homogeneous property of the system. Okay. So actually, this exponential distribution, I think, can be also a very useful tool. Okay, so I'll give you an example. Okay, so basically, we're considering a BEC in a 1D optical lattice. So this is a laser, counterpropagating laser, then the BEC will form these pancake structures. Okay, so that's a no lateral confinement, so each wheel is a 2D system, okay? I want to, then when you think about it, as you increase the strength of this laser, you will be able to cut off the tunnels between these pancakes, okay? And then this system become 2D system, so it can have this BKT phase transition, okay? So then, and I'll show you, you know, then this exponential distribution can be used to, you know, to tell whether this transition has happened or not. Okay, so this is an experiment done by my friends back in China. Okay, so this is a very simple experiment. Okay, basically it can be done any BEC group. But so basically we have this BEC in 1D. So this S is the strength of the lattice. So this S is zero, but so there's no lattice. Then you have this picture. Then you do this distribution function. You look at it, it's not exponential. Okay. So then you further increase this strength of optical lattice, then it become closer, but still not exponential distribution. Eventually, when you get to this point, okay, when S equals to around 20, so basically 20 Lyapunov energy, okay. So then the density distribution of this wave, this cloud, okay, becomes exponentially distributed. Okay. If you further increase the distribution, but just becomes nicer. Okay.
So what is S?
S is the strength of the lattice. So basically, at this point, basically you are initially there's no more tunneling between the pancakes at this strength. Okay. So how to explain this? You know why at these two strengths of lattice? Okay, the distribution is exponential.
So data is taken, so you have this data, right?
Yeah, this is our data. So, this is experiment data.
So you have a whole sequence of pancakes and you're taking a picture, but basically you're counting many of them.
Yeah, along this.
Once you take a picture, then you analyze for how many places, for given n.
Yeah. The kind of histogram, So basically, at some position, you know, density is low, some position is density is high. So you have to see how many, okay. So basically, then how to explain this, this phenomenon. So then it's exponential dispute. So this is a way to explain it, okay. So basically, this is a phase diagram, okay. So basically, this just shows you, this as J decrease, so basically this is a strength of lattice, okay. So that's a quantum critical point. At this point, basically, this lattice strength is strong enough so there's some tunneling between these pancakes. So we say there's a quantum phase transition between some fluid regime to more insulated regime, okay. Then above here, then you have this BKT physics, because now there's no longer tunneling between these pancakes. So each pancake is a 2D system, so you have these BKT transitions. So then you have this BKT transition, the temperature is around here. Okay, so above this one, then you have this, then BKT transition has already happened. Below this line, BKT transition does not happen. So the experiment result is like this. So this is the data point of the experiment results, okay. So basically for this, you know, this data, it's in the superfluid regime. So basically there's a tunneling between each pancake. So there's no phase fluctuation between these pancakes, okay. But as you enter this region, okay, so it becomes, then there's no tunneling between these pancakes. So there's a phase fluctuation between this each pancakes, okay. So it's kind of a random variable becomes. And at the same time, because this temperature is above this BKT transition, so there's also phase fluctuations inside this pancake, okay. So now you have two phase fluctuations, basically two random variables, okay. Then as I said before, you know, if you want to have this exponential distribution, then at each given space or time, you have to have two random variables, okay. So then this sufficient, you know, gives a sufficient condition to have this exponential distribution. So that's why, you know, at these two points, they can observe this exponential distribution, okay. While at this point, they cannot. The only pity here is they do not have the data here. Okay.
So you say the exponential distribution reflects the lack of phase coherence between planes.
Between pancake and also inside.
So is the first one, B5, is the one loose phase coherence between planes, and B6 the one that in planes. So what you mentioned 5 and 6, I just
tried to. A5 is here. It's just on the boundary.
I see. So still have some phase coherence.
Yes, there's some, but it's already the you know, very close to exponential distribution. But here, you know, it's we are inside this one. So the fit is very well. You know, here actually, if you look at detail, it's not the.
So you would interpret that for B6 that will be
the phase fluctuation.
But do you still have phase coherence within the plane again?
No. For A6, there's no phase coherence inside of the plane. Okay. So there's also no phase coherence between the phase. So basically, then you have two phases which are fluctuating. Mm-hmm. So because of this, then you have this exponential distribution. Okay. So the pity. Okay.
How do you have a negative n over there in the distribution?
Yeah, actually, the measure is. So basically, do the measurements without BEC, you should light there. Okay. Then with BEC, then it should another. So that's a phase fluctuation. So experimentally, actually, there are always some negative values here.
So this dashed line is all imagined, or only that with data?
What do you imagine?
So for this diagram, this first diagram, what is temperature? So the dashed line is all imagined from the data?
No. Actually, this is, I think, this is, This is computed by Hongwei.
Okay.
I think, you know, this is not my work, okay, so I don't know the details, but what I remember is this line is computed by Hongwei, but this line is drawn by hand, okay, because there's no computation behind this line. But this line, is, I believe that's a computation behind this line.
I'm still sort of getting back to my question again. So now you try to say that you superposition many, the previous argument, you superposition many plane waves and you get that exponential behavior.
Yeah.
Now this is actually a thermodynamic system, and why would I expect, I mean, is it the superposition of the same magnitude of K or?
No, maybe I should go back to this. That's a rigorous proof. Okay, yeah. So basically, let's go back to this. Actually, the superposition of random superposition of a plane wave is not the essential point. The essential point is here. Is this one is a complex eigenvalue, complex number. So if here you put this one as a real number, what the distribution is not the exponential distribution. So basically, what says here is, you know, at any given point, space point, you need two random variables to decide the density there. If that's the case, then you will have this exponential distribution. So in the experiment, it's the same. At each point, it has two phase fluctuating. Okay, one is inside this plane for the BKD transition, and the other one is between the plane. So you have two phase fluctuating. So basically, at each given point, to decide the density, you need two random variables. So that's why, you know, it has this exponential distribution. So this is essential. Actually, if you think about this as, you know, if you have spin orbit coupling, then you need four numbers to decide the density at a given point. Then the distribution is different. Okay, you can compute it's different. Okay. So basically, I just want to show you one last data because I think my time is running out. So basically, experimentally, they don't have this, but theoretically, the computer, you know, below the BKD transition, there's no exponential distribution, but above, there's this distribution. Theoretically, they did this, okay. And so basically, let me summarize what I did, okay? So basically, we found, okay, the quantum chaos can drive a quantum system states to a steady or equilibrium state, you know, whose density distribution is exponential. Okay, I compared, you know, two different random gases. One is a quantum random gas. The other one is a thermal gas. For this quantum random gas, okay, so it obeys this exponential distribution. But for classical or thermal gas, it should have a Gaussian density distribution. Okay, I'll give you an example. Actually, this exponential distribution can be used in, you know, in quantum physics to extract information about a phase transition. Okay, thank you very much.
Actually, to return back to this ETH issue,
okay.
What you were saying, in my opinion, I was really surprised. It was a kind of astonishing to me, because I would expect some mild violation of ETH in the sense that if we look at something local, like we fix the wave vectors, call it unity, take a system size much larger than unity, meaning that it's much larger
than the wavelength.
Than the wavelength, okay. And then I would expect that the wavelength is essentially correlation radius. So that I would expect, consistently with what you were saying, that if we go to the distances much larger than the wavelength, we wouldn't expect any within a given eigenstate. We wouldn't expect any correlations between pieces of the eigenstate. So that if we just average. So that we can add averaging with respect to the position with a given eigenstate. Then I would expect that with this addition, ETH should be better. So if you allow me just to do averaging with respect to the position, not just looking at a given point where my eigenstate can have a node, for example. But if you allow me to do translational averaging, I would expect that everything would work fine and a single eigenstate would be representative. you agree with me?
And representative what?
And you were saying that, at least, how I interpret what you were saying, that if you take a single eigenstate, you cannot read out all the statistics from a single eigenstate. Is that correct, or maybe?
But what do you mean? So suppose this is the eigenstate we compute. Okay. So basically, for this eigenstate, we can also to compute this density distribution.
Yes.
Then this is what we found. Okay. Does not fit this exponential distribution.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, so this is what we just what we did. Okay, so actually we checked hundreds of these eigenstates. So none of them fit.
Meaning that there's some
Order.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, this order you see this classical trajectory is here, right? So because this is the famous one called the scar states. You know, in this eigenstate, you will always have this fingerprint of this classical periodic motion.
Basically, what you are saying is that the order is seen by naked eye here.
Yeah. It's just a classical. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, a related question. So, naively, I would think that, you know, one could, at least for high enough energies, apply Berry's conjecture and say that the wave functions should be the random superpositions of plane waves, and then from that you could derive all results from, you know, certain initial conditions of the dynamical problems you solve. So did you try to do that?
Go to very high energy?
Yeah.
In our case, if you go to high energy, you just increase the value of V, the initial velocity. Then it increase the energy of the system, and then you can go there. But at least to our knowledge, you know, we try the different values of V. What we see is the same thing here. Basically, it's the same. We always get this exponential distribution. And I think the highest eigenstate we checked is about 2,000s, you know. It's not very high, but we can check higher if it's necessary. But for all these eigenstates, you know, they just do not have this exponential distribution. So maybe I can go higher to check other higher eigenstates. But
what I find most striking about your result is that it works so well even in cases where the individual eigenstates are not looking. Yeah. This state does not satisfy Berry's conjecture.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
From what you said about looking at many individual states and seeing intensity distributions that don't match, never mind matching what I think they should match, they don't match each other, you're seeing strongly scarred states, and maybe that's, you're seeing a lot of strongly scarred states, and maybe that's because the system isn't fully chaotic, I don't know, but.
Not many, actually, I just give you an example here. Yeah. Actually, we checked the state which has no scars.
Okay.
But the distribution is still not exponential.
No, it shouldn't be. It should be Porter Thomas. But leaving that aside, even though you have many scarred eigenstates that you're superposing in your initial state, your exponential distribution still works extremely well for your average.
If you have many eigenstates, then you superpose these on each other, then you have this complex coefficient between them. Then you will always have this exponential.
So I find that striking, that the your exponential distribution works so well even in systems where Berry's even in systems and at energies where Berry's conjecture for the eigenstates is not working very well, your conjecture works much better.
Yeah, that's what I got.
I think that's nice.
Okay.
Very good. I think we're gonna switch the speaker, and let's thank the audience.